Welcome to the Rethink ELA podcast, hosted by English language arts teacher Michelle Waters. Prepare to receive strategies, products, and expert advice tailored to help teachers build social awareness, student agency, and voice in their ELA classrooms.
Welcome to the Rethink ELA podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Waters, and I can't wait to share with you a new concept that I had not even considered, but it totally made sense when I heard it. My guest this week is Marissa Thompson, an English teacher at Carlsbad High School in California. She has more than 12 years' experience. She's taught everything from AP to remedial English. She also serves on several vertical teams in her district in which she develops curriculum and environmental goals, and also serves several universities as an online instructor, a cooperating teacher, and guest collaborator. You're probably going to think I spend my life on Twitter, and you're probably right. But I discovered Marissa while scrolling through my feed one Saturday afternoon. I saw a post by Alice Keeler that said, "We cannot expect older students to be critical thinkers unless we teach them from day one to be curious critical thinkers." Then Marissa replied, "I start the year with instructionless challenges," and my brain screeched to a halt. I don't even think I saw the rest of the tweet. I thought, instructionless challenges? And then I thought about all the times that my students expressed more concern over how many words needed to be in the essay, more concern over how many sentences needed to be in a paragraph, more concern over what's the minimum they had to do to get the grade that they wanted, then concern over how to craft the message they were wanting to convey. I knew I had to interview Marissa. So in just a few moments, you'll learn how her instructionless challenges led to more critical thinking, more problem solving, and more collaboration in her classroom, and how you can implement these challenges in yours. We'll be right back.
When it comes to reaching students through literature, finding reliable resources is challenging. Your search is over. Rethink ELA Podcast is here to provide student-tested, research-based strategies, products, and advice. Here's your host, Michelle Waters.
Welcome back to Rethink ELA Podcast. I'm Michelle Waters, and I am here with Marissa. Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am doing great. I am sitting here at the OU Library in Norman, Oklahoma, using their lovely internet, which is a lot faster than what I have at home.
Fair enough. I'm up in my room in lovely Southern California, and for us, we've got a little cold snap of 55 degrees, so I'm inside and bundled up.
That's crazy. It is, I think, 65 degrees out here. No, 63 degrees here in Oklahoma. And I kid you not, 2 days ago, it was down in the 20s and we had ice on the ground.
Yeah, we don't really do well with ice around here. We don't even have shoes. You know, it's flip-flops for everybody.
I hear you. So yeah, it's been crazy around here in terms of the weather, but I'm glad to be back up into livable temperatures again. So, here earlier yesterday, I think it was, I was looking at Twitter and reading all these comments by teachers, and I noticed you say something, I don't even remember what it was in reply to, but it was about teaching without instructions and or learning without instructions. And I'm thinking, whoa, wait a second, that could be potentially a paradigm shifting pedagogical idea. And I'm thinking, I need to talk to this lady and find out what she's talking about.
Yeah, it's been really interesting for me, and it's been kind of an experiment that's been going on for a couple of years, and I decided to go full force this school year, and it has been fantastic. It's been really, really exciting for me as a teacher and for the students. It's been great.
Awesome. Well, I am excited to hear about this because I love learning new things and figuring out new ways to engage my students, especially. And I know with traditional teaching, it's all about, you know, providing all these instructions, and what it really comes down to is students complying. So what I'd like to hear is kind of how you arrived at this concept that instructions are limiting.
Yeah, I found the same thing. And I was starting to get pretty frustrated with my students who I knew were really capable and really bright. And I would be called over for the simplest things. How do I do this? Or where can I find this? And those are all fine questions and they should be asked. But I really think that they are capable of finding out the information they need on their own or with their peers.
Absolutely.
Just like we have as teachers. And so I started playing with it slowly a couple years ago. I would ask questions and students would reply with more questions and I would let them figure it out, right? That productive struggle. And then, yeah. And then this August, before the school year started, we were lucky enough to have George Kuros come and give a presentation. And in the middle of it, he asked us to post a video on Twitter. And I hadn't been on social media in years, and I've never even seen Twitter. And so it was interesting because he said, you'll figure it out. You have 10 minutes. And we all figured it out. And he said, your students can do the same thing. You don't need to be so detailed. They can figure these things out. And so I started to run with that. I started providing kind of the requirements and what my goals were, what skills I wanted them to learn. And then everything else was completely up to the student. It was hard at first. I got lots of glares and lots of, you know, can I do this? And yes, you can do anything you need to. This is what I'm looking for. This is the skill I'm assessing. Everything else is totally up to you. It's been really wonderful to see them take responsibility for their own learning and try things out and just really get creative. And they started to go to each other. And that was fun for me to see. I became that. We always hear, you know, the teachers can be the facilitators, the mentor, the coach, as opposed to the sage on the stage. And then I finally got to start doing that. And I do it now every day. The other thing that happened at my department a couple years ago got rid of D's. So there are no D's in English 3 and 4 for the juniors and seniors, because we found that a lot of the students were doing the bare minimum just to get the D. And I started seeing the same thing with my students who were earning A's. It was more, can I get the A? It's like, yeah, but you could do so much more. And they're like, right, but I have the A. Like, I don't need to do anymore. So I wanted to do something a little bit different. And so now I don't have a 5-point rubric. AP has a 9-point rubric. I have one. I have a 1-point rubric, and that's the grade level standard. And if you do less than that, then you'll get a grade lower than a B minus. If you do better than that, you'll end up somewhere in the B and the A. And that's been huge. Everybody's been blowing me away with the work that they're doing and the learning and the thinking. And it's been wonderful.
That's awesome. That really sounds like the piece that I need in my class to get my kids to move away from, you know, I'm just looking for this grade and I'm done now.
Right.
And that's pretty much what I've been looking for myself. How have your students responded to not having instructions?
You know, initially they were really concerned. This year I'm teaching all honors courses, though I've done this with what we call college prep as well. Mm-hmm. And they were really concerned they weren't going to be able to get the grade that they wanted. How do I know how to get an A? How do I know that I won't be getting a B or a C? And it took a lot of discussions. It took a lot of discussions with the students. Right. Back to school night, I discussed it with the parents. And as soon as they started to see that their grades were actually a little bit higher than they usually were, just by 3 or 4%, they were more on board with this more experimental style of education, especially when they started to see that their skills were improving. And then we had lots of discussions of, look, the jobs that you guys are going to be going into, it's not going to be here's your set of instructions, go do it. It's not going to be that. It's going to be, you're the innovators, you're the thinkers. We need more from you. Go solve these problems. And they will have had no practice in that. And so they're much more on board than they were, what they were initially. So there were lots of glares.
Yeah.
There were lots of glares, lots of frustrated kids, but we figured it out together. And, it's a team effort now. It's really, really cool.
Absolutely. And I think in my class, one part that will help when I introduce this piece is that I also tell the kids, if you're not happy with your grade or you don't feel like you did well enough, do it again. Revise it.
Yes.
I mean, revision is part of the writing process. Why can't it be part of, you know, the project process or the assignment process? Let's, you know, if you didn't get it the first time, let's try it again. I would rather them have that learning experience than just do that one and done and then we're moving on to something else.
Right, don't you? That's, and then
absolutely.
I started doing the grade conferences. I tried that for the first time this semester. And it was inspired by Catelyn Tucker. It was everything. It was absolutely everything. The kids got 2 weeks of class time. We were doing other things as well, but they got 2 weeks to go back and revise anything from the semester. And there were some questions that went along with it, But then they had 3 minutes to come up, present the improvements they made. What resources did you use to, you know, make those improvements? And what did you learn from this process? And some of my kids went up somewhere between 7 and 10%. And I even had a student that went from a D to a B. It was so cool. And one kid finally said, I understand essay analysis now. And I was like, you do? And he, oh, yeah. I'm not writing about the book, am I? I was like, not really. He goes, and I'm not really writing about the theme, am I? I was like, yeah, a little bit. And he goes, I'm writing about how the author wrote the theme. I was like, right. That's where we're headed. Yeah. So, but it was so cool without the reflection, without the going back to those assignments and for in the process of that grade conference, he wouldn't have necessarily made that discovery.
Absolutely. So how did you go about implementing the no instructions pedagogy?
You know, it was a really slow process. A couple years ago, we so enjoyed reading one of our novels. And I said, you know, I just can't ruin this book and how we feel about this book right now with a multiple choice test. I had a test.
Yeah.
But the students were so connected to it. I'm going, okay, I know they understand it. And if I know they understand it and I know they know their themes and I'm listening to this incredible collegiate discussion, why do I need to, you know, have them match the quotes to the characters? Like, why is that is not why the author wrote the book. That is not why I wanted them to read the book. And so I started there and I had what I called an inspiration project. They could do anything to show me their understanding of the author's themes or what they got from it, the universal message that he was sending. And the submissions were incredible and varied. Just, you know, some kids were writing songs and bringing in their guitar. Other kids did some interior design work, models. Some people wrote, some people delivered monologues. It was really quite something. And that was all for Fahrenheit 451. And I thought, you know, I'm kind of on something here. It was so much more valuable and so much more memorable and respectful of the student.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really, and they got to use their talents, right?
Absolutely.
We always say we want to bring in that relevance and have it connect to their own lives. And they finally got to do that. So I got rid of tests slowly. Mm-hmm. I got rid of reading quizzes slowly. And then I am now finally this year, I don't have novel tests. I don't have novel reading quizzes. And I don't assign study questions. I have them. I've made them. I've curated them. But instead, the students have a short discussion. And then that becomes our class discussion. Whatever they curate from their own little group discussions, that's what I lead in their class discussions. And they hit everything that I need to. Mm-hmm. In my study questions that I would have given them, they hit every single one. But then they extend it. They go far beyond. And every day that somebody comes up with something I have not heard before, and they're practicing all those skills, those analytical, those critical thinking skills, and without me telling them what they need to think or how they need to think, they're doing it themselves.
Absolutely. And that's what ultimately what they want, because like you said, they're going to go into jobs where somebody's not going to just give them the questions or give them the quiz or give them step-by-step instructions. They're going to have to go in, see what the problem is or see what needs to be done and find a way to make it happen.
Right. And they will have entered into those jobs without any practice whatsoever. And that's not it. And we hear all the time that they need from their employers or their future employers, they need collaborative skills. They need people skills. They need problem finders, not just problem solvers.
Absolutely.
Right. And now with this, they're actually practicing those skills, reflecting on those skills. And they see the value in them. They really do. My biggest naysayers, my biggest critics, the students are now the believers. And I get a ton of feedback from them.
Absolutely. So as you've gone through this process over the past couple of years, what problems have you experienced and how did you solve those problems?
So I think the hardest part is that it's not the education that the parent remembers. They're extremely supportive. And I was lucky enough to have a lot of students from their freshman year now go into their sophomore year. And I used back to school night to really talk about these changes that I was going to run with. And they were all for it. But it's tough. They don't get a ton of feedback immediately. there aren't these little assignments where I can say, okay, your kid is complying. And that's how we judge right now how a kid is doing in the class, right? You upload the grade, you see that they did their homework completely. Because I am simplifying and I'm focusing assignments and letting students really be creative and giving them that time in class, because I don't do homework either. It's all in class. So it's a longer period of time in between posting of grades. So that's been a challenge. The parent wants to know, hey, how is my kid doing? And I have to reply, hey, they haven't had an assignment in the last 2 weeks. We've been doing a ton of discussion and a lot of collaborative work, but I don't have anything as of yet that I can provide you with besides, you know, you can talk to your student and have them show you what we've been working on in class. They can show you their part, or you can have a discussion with them about the book, but we'll be having assignments in a week or something. That's been tough for the parents to be able to monitor.
What about your administration? What has their response been?
Positive, really positive. And I would imagine they're, if they have any concerns, it would be that they might have a parent or two calling them going, hey, I need to know where my student stands in this class. But I'm not hearing that. I'm not getting that back. It's one student out of 160, one or two. But they're into it. So my administration does come around, and I'm really lucky to have really involved administrators and very supportive administrators. But they come in the classroom and they see what's going on and they love it. Then they talk to the kids. The kids know what, you know, the objective is. They, you know, the administrator comes in and goes, okay, what are you guys working on? As opposed to what assignment is this?
Right.
And they're having really authentic conversations with the students, and it's been really, really wonderful. And I've been sharing with some of my colleagues, and they've been sharing with me, and that's how we all get better, right? We inspire each other.
Absolutely. I just thought of a question as you were talking about that. When you are then grading, you know, you've given the students an objective and then you go to give a grade. Is it on a standards-based grading system at that point then?
It is, yeah. So the standard for me, because I need to translate it, right? I have to translate it into a letter grade because the students need it. I want them to go to college and I want them to go to the college they want to go to, and they need their GPA. So to me, grade level, the grade level standard is a B-. And then that's how I figure that out. So I do provide them with the grade level standard. And I say, look, if you exceed this, you're somewhere in the B range. If you exceed it by far, you're talking an A. That's what an A is defined as. But it's fun because by not giving them the instructions, by not giving them the rubric, this is how you get an A, they're surpassing it. They're reaching a potential that I would limit them by giving them instructions. They're passing that.
Absolutely. So in order to help them pass that, you are going to have to design some lessons. So how do you design lessons that don't include instructions?
So we do a lot of practicing. We do a ton of collaboration. I show them samples. I give them what I call tips and tricks, or these are different things you can try. How do you think it's coming out? Do you think that this is working for us? Do we need to change it up? Are you proud of your product? If not, what is it lacking? How can I help you make it better? But it's not step by step. This is what you do. Steps 1 through 17. It's not, like on a rubric, these are the 9 things you need to complete. It's different than that. And a lot of times with our essay rubrics, I don't know if you have the same problem. We say an A has originality of thought or an original, structure, essay structure. And so they'll ask me, how can you teach me how to write an A level paper? And the answer should be not really, because here it says original, original, original. You're going to need to figure that out. So we're pretty much teaching the grade level standard anyway, that B level. And then once I have them master those skills, or if I need to assess where they are, then they can go do a project, or then they can go show me their mastery, however they see fit. Or if I have a project idea, I throw that out to them, and that's when all the questions start. So it's really a discussion instead of an assignment in detail.
Okay. I like that, because the more invested kids are in what you're doing, the more interested that they're going to be in actually doing that work and doing that project.
Well, and they become beautiful, right? The product becomes a real representation of what the student can do. And by opening it up to them so that they have some choice, not only in the product itself, but what programs they might use, or, you know, how long will this video be, or how long can I present for? It's like, you know, this is up to you. They start to bring in their talents. They start to bring in other people. They start collaborating with their families or communities or their coaches, whoever. And it kind of becomes that utopian education that you really hope for, you know, that you came into the profession for.
Absolutely. And it sounds like we might have already answered the question I had on my mind, which is, how do you support those students who struggle with motivation? And I'm kind of thinking maybe a new kid shows up who's used to the traditional way, and you set them down in this class and say, figure it out. And they say, yeah, okay, next. What do you do?
So I haven't had that. I haven't had a kid that has entered into the middle of the year. I did have, though, this year I had a lot of repeat students mixed with new kids in my class. And I think it became contagious, right? This collaborative kind of teamwork environment, this freedom. They saw that it was really wonderful to be able to come into a class and have a part in it, have a part in the plan, have a part in designing the assessment, have a part in, you know, even, and they love this, in the due date. Right. As long as it works for my schedule,
yes.
You know, do you guys think you're ready to turn this in yet? And like, can we have two more days with this? And it's like, yeah, but just remember, you know, I've got really high expectations for what you can do. So, I need to grade it by Thursday. Okay. Yeah. We'll have it Thursday. You know, it's a team. And I love that.
A team effort. It sounds like that your class, whenever, you know, when there were some newer kids, it sounds like they just folded those kids in and just brought them along.
They did. They became kind of like mentors themselves. Yeah, they did. And then for the kids that really did struggle mm-hmm. with it, because it is new, we had the grade conference, and they knew ahead of time that they would be able to revise anything that they wanted to. And I would take a look at it at the end of the semester. And if they are showing me consistency in their ability, then great. I'll change the score for that skill. I have no problem with that.
Awesome. So it sounds like you also, or your students are able to use technology as part of this process. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Right. So we did have originally two Chromebook carts, right? Two sets of laptops for the students to use per department. And then we changed that this year. This year, every English class has a class set. And that way every student has access to technology.
Absolutely. And that's amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Right. We're really lucky and we know it. But my biggest fear was that my technology would be the coolest way to take a reading quiz. And I didn't want it to be that, right? We have all these high hopes for what the internet can do, or gosh, if we only had the technology, the things we could do in the classroom. And I was determined to not have it either.
You can't do the same things, but just throw some tech in there.
Right. I just did not want it to be that way. Right. So
right.
A lot of my options for the students, I'll teach them first semester how to use Pictochart, or pardon me, I tell them to go use it. They figure it out. I don't tell them how, but they learn how to use Pictochart and Canva. And we have a website that we use all year long, kind of reflecting on their growth, and they can use Wix, Weebly, Google Sites, whatever they want. Can you make movies, you know, iMovies and Screencastify? And a lot of these I've never used before, but, you know, using George Kurios, they'll figure it out. So I had them go try Pictochart, and they had some questions, and I told them, I really have no idea, but I can Google it. So, you know, how to search something for Pictochart, you know, but we do use it, and we use the technology a lot. And that's been transforming for us.
So as part of this process, you have kids who are creating projects, you have them figuring things out on their own. At some point, you have to assess their work. How do you do that when you haven't given them instructions and they've pretty much run with the project, whatever it is?
Right. So I tell them ahead of time what skills I'm expecting to assess. Mm-hmm. and I tell them, you know, what my general idea is, and then everything else is up to them. So instead of grading the product, and instead of grading, did you follow my instructions? Even though instructional literacy is important, that's not why I'm asking them to do something. So can you show me your understanding of this novel in the form of a documentary, let's say, or for Shakespeare, they had to do a background informational video, and it had to include the vocabulary instead of doing vocab charts and quizzes. It had to use the vocabulary. It had to include the play, and it had to include some sort of other topic like Elizabethan theater or the life of Shakespeare, his biography. And they, you know, I assessed how they collaborated. I assessed their use of technology. I assessed their professionalism in the details once they had submitted it. I assessed their ability to synthesize. I didn't grade the video. I graded the skills.
Right. And you pulled the skills from the standards for your state.
Yeah, which was really freeing for me because I'm sitting there going, gosh, I didn't become a teacher to give quizzes and tests and study questions. This is not why I became a teacher. And then I look at the standards. Not a single one says quiz. Not a single one says test. Not a single one says study question. It was all skill-based. And so when all these teachers started talking about genius hour or how do I bring in, you know, an interest from a student into my English class, like what if he's super into skateboarding or this student is, you know, folklorico dancing. Okay, well, great. My subject, luckily, just talks about the ability to read and write and listen and speak and communicate and have digital literacy. You can do that with any topic. So it was a really cool moment for me when I said, oh, I don't have to give it a single quiz for the rest of my days. I don't have to limit what a student might bring into our classroom. If they want to read and annotate articles on fishing or camping or traveling or business, if they're already, you know, starting to move toward a career, I can assess the skills that they have, as opposed to making sure that they focus on the things that I want them to focus on or the topics that I want them to read about. I can assess the skill regardless of the topic.
Absolutely. And so that gives them the choice that they need to be invested in the class. So what advice would you give to teachers who are new to this concept but want to give it a try?
I would tell them to start slowly and be really comfortable with the idea that it may not work out initially, or that a student might fight back a little bit because they're just going with what they're used to. And it's really simple to do. I think if they got one of their assignments and looked at their instructions and deleted them and had just those basic requirements and then told the students, hey, you've got 20 minutes. You're going to work together to kind of figure out different ways that you can do this. I mean, you could brainstorm as a class, you know, how would you go about making a project like this or completing an assignment to show me these skills? What different ways could you do that? That's a really great place to start. And for me, it's become a mantra. I swear it was inspired by the undo button because Google automatically saves, right? And you could just undo. I saw this quote from Alice Keeler on Twitter too that said, the difference between someone who is techie and someone who is not is the person who's willing to click on stuff and see what happens. And it's so true. This undo button got into my mentality of my teaching. I can undo anything. There's no permanent damage done, but I can, you know, try it and let's see what happens. So in my class, it's been, let's see what happens and we'll see what we can do. And I want you to learn how to learn how. And those have been my three all year, to where my kids probably are pretty darn annoyed by hearing it so much. But but they know it and they get it and they're trying things. And I just, it's been so much fun.
Yes. And you know what, this reminds me, what you've been saying this whole time reminds me of something that I was told. I think it was after my freshman year in college, I decided to take a class in a program called Adobe Freehand because they didn't have an Adobe PageMaker class and I needed to learn how to use that product. So I just took what was available. And the instructor told us, don't look at the program and think, what do I know how to do with this program? Because we were supposed to create some sort of project using the program. And she said, don't just figure out what you know how to make the program do and then do that. Think, what do you want to create? And then figure out how to make the program do that.
Right. And then even if, let's say, I don't see it happening because I love Google, but let's say Google is no longer the thing, right? Mm-hmm. Just like we used to do PowerPoint, now we do Google Slides. It's not about the program itself. I don't need you to become a master at Prezi or at Powtoon. I need you to learn how to learn how. I need you to be comfortable with clicking things. I need you to be comfortable with not being a master at it and figuring it out. I know that everyone keeps talking about critical thinking and problem solving and analytical and all these other terms. And to me, it's a really different thing to just have to figure it out.
You know, and it's true of anything, whether you're talking about a piece of technology or a program or a book that you need to read or an essay you need to write. Don't think, what do I need know how to do? And then just do that. Think, what do I want to do? What do I want to achieve? And then figure it out.
Yes. And if you need help, ask someone. You know, but you're capable. You can do it. You can figure it out. Let's just see what happens. Give it a try. But then if not, you've got a lot of people around you. You've got a great support system around you to help you make it the best that it can be. Not just to the A level, but the best that it can be.
Absolutely. So is there anything else you'd like to add?
I just really appreciate the opportunity. And I have loved getting to know everyone on Twitter and you as well. And I would assume that the podcast is going out on Twitter.
Yes, it will.
Okay. But if we can keep trying new things and sharing our successes and asking about the problems that we're encountering, I think we can really do some great things and transform education to be what we thought it could be when we first started into this amazing, amazing profession.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Encourage your high school students to share their stories, discuss building a representative society, and develop their writing skills. With this set of 15 highly engaging lesson plans, you can mix and match to meet your students' needs. Download this unit at rethinkela.com/SJWP.